Support for the Exchange Podcast from NHPR comes from you, our listeners,
and from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu is with us today. On January 3rd, he'll be sworn in for his second term after winning re-election by a healthy margin. But this time around, the governor faces a new political landscape, with his Republican Party losing control of all other branches of state government to Democrats. Still, the governor and lawmakers must agree on a budget as their first priority, so they'll have to agree on a number of funding issues, including the state's mental health system, public education, and infrastructure. We'll cover these and a lot more this hour with New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu. And, of course, let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And in addition to listening today, you can watch our show on Facebook Live. And Governor Sununu, welcome back. Thank you for being here.
Well, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And let's talk about that new political landscape. How are you preparing, Governor, for the Democratic House, Senate, Executive Council? Have you talked to Speaker Shurtleff or Senate President Donna Susie?
Yeah, well, preparing is the operative word, because I've been told, I don't know if this is true, that I'm the first Republican governor since the Civil War to have a Democrat-run Senate and House. I guess that's true. So it's a little hard to kind of look for folks to have some perspective. I actually had lunch with Governor Lynch last week, and I said, "So how did you do it?"
Right, because he had a Republican. Yeah, he had a very and he had a council.
He had a very strong Republican
right,
legislature.
That big
I think
wave.
At the time, 300 Republicans out of 400 in the House. And so we talked just a little bit about his approach. And look, at the end of the day, I don't change my approach at all. Right? I mean, you just deal with folks. You bring them in. You talk to them. You create as much of a partnership as you can. And remember, most legislation we agree on. I mean, my guess is I'll get a couple hundred bills onto my desk this time, just like I did last time, most of which is technical stuff or clean up this or fix that or common sense things that we can all agree on and we'll move forward on. There'll be 10 to 20 pieces of legislation that we are going to have to really hash out. And I have a great relationship with both Donna Susie and Speaker Shurtleff. So I met with them both in various capacities in my first term, and we'll continue that relationship and we'll keep building on it. So, they're invited in. We'll have our regular meetings. We'll work across the aisle where we can really find agreement. And that's really the goal. Where can we find agreement? What are both sides willing to give up on a little bit? Both of our parties, remember, it's not black and white. It's not just Republican and Democrat. You know, there's a different spectrum of Democrats, right? There's different spectrums of Republicans. And so that's one of the nuances of all of New Hampshire politics is in terms of not just driving your party line. You never want to just do that. But they don't necessarily just have a single party line either, right? So various folks are going to come in, and that's the other thing to really understand. Various folks have different passions, right? This representative or that senator has a passion. They have the knowledge base. They have the facts. At the end of the day, I'm a big believer, just come with facts, right? Let's have good in-depth discussions and make sure that whatever policy we're driving, we're really basing it on what we know are going to be positive results. Just not you can't legislate with gut feeling, right? You got to actually have data to back up what you're doing, what you're trying to achieve, and accountability within that system to get the results for the people.
Well, as you know, the first job that you and lawmakers will have to perform is getting that budget out there. By law, you've got to have a balanced budget by the end of June. You're going to be giving your budget address in February,
yep.
Governor Sununu. I'm sure you're still working on it, but can you give us a hint what will be high on that list of budget priorities?
Well, the budget is the key document, right? That so much comes out of the budget. And I'm a big believer that two things. The budget should be the budget, right? I get a little hesitant when I see legislatures that want to put more policy-driven things, political things, into the budget. So let's keep the budget pure as that. Secondly, Within the budget, you have to understand there's three facets. One is the operational budget, right? How much we're actually spending to run government, what programs and services will come from that. And that comes from the revenues that will be derived through mostly through business taxes here in the state. Secondly is the surplus funds. So we have a bump. Things are good right now. We know that. If down the road, God forbid, the economy were to take a downturn, and likely at some point it will. I mean, that's just the natural course of things. The fear is that if you create too much bloated government and based on those surplus funds today, you will not have those surplus funds 2 or 3 years from now, and therefore programs have to be cut. So surplus funds are what I call one-time spending funds, and that's where we should invest in infrastructure, one-time programs. Now's the opportunity to make those investments so that if and when times do get tighter, we don't have to cut massively. We saw just the opposite play out about 10 years ago, and they had to cut almost $1 billion out of the budget because
after the recession,
because when times were really good, they spent all that on operational costs, and that's just not sustainable. So you have to think for the long term and make sure one-time funds are truly spent on one time. And then the third piece is the actual capital budget itself, approximately $120 million that we borrow for the state for, again, infrastructure one-time projects. We've lowered that from $125 million down to $120 million. It's very responsible. We're right where we need to be. We work with our credit agencies to make sure we're not over-borrowing or overspending, and making sure that those requests are just meeting the priorities. And we get, let's say, $400 or $500 million of requests for that capital budget. We only have about $120 million to spend. And that's okay. You just have to make sure you're focusing on the priorities, not political wants and needs and all that kind of stuff, just the priorities of the state.
Well, we heard from lots of listeners, Governor Sununu, in advance of today's show. And one priority we heard from a lot of people about is the state's mental health system. I want to just give you a flavor of what we heard from people. This question from Exchange listener Elizabeth: please ask the governor if he supports the 10-year mental health plan put forward by Health and Human Services. Elizabeth says, our opioid epidemic is part of a bigger mental health epidemic. People are waiting in emergency rooms because the state hospital is overcrowded. As a state, we seem to be incarcerating people rather than providing them with mental health care. A similar question, Governor, from another listener, Karen. The 10-year mental health plan presents important ideas to address New Hampshire's failing mental health system. The last 10-year plan presented many of the same ideas but failed to be funded. Karen says, I'd be interested in Governor Sununu's thoughts about the funding of the recently presented plan. Thank you both, Elizabeth and Karen. And Governor Sununu, what is your commitment to fully funding this plan?
Yeah, so let's understand something. When I came in the beginning of 2017, our mental health system was an absolute disaster. For about 4 or 5 years, the system was completely neglected. Programs were cut. You had a rush on the mental health system. There was some challenges with management at New Hampshire Hospital. We changed that out. We brought all the stakeholders in. We put all the ideas on the table, put some good legislation forward, put about $12 to $15 million into the mental health system to just get it stabilized. That was the first step. But the second piece of that is, I said, we needed this 10-year mental health plan. We need a strategy so every 2 years we're not fighting out what the mental health needs are just in the moment, but we're really building a strategy and a plan for the future. Of course, I support the 10-year mental health plan because we help write it. I mean, we're very much part of that process. We drove that process. It's very good. And the final plan will be released, I think, sometime in early January. The first preliminary plan was really, we made sure the stakeholders have a lot of say in this.
Lots of public hearings.
And we took the voices of the people, if you will, and help create that backbone. Now, on top of that, that mostly focused on funding. And the funding has to be there. It's a priority of the state, and I'm going to make sure that our budget really addresses that. But there's a lot of other issues that the initial discussions I don't think covered, which were the regulatory barriers, what we're doing with infrastructure investment, how we treat people with involuntary admissions. For example, does everyone in the emergency room ultimately have to get to a bed at New Hampshire Hospital? Well, many do. Do the hospitals and the emergency staff have the training to actually get more community-based treatment back in their local communities? That's something that we put a lot of money into in these first 2 years of tackling this problem, community-based programs, emergency ACT teams that are out there making sure that people can get services back in their communities and not everyone has to rush to Concord for a solution. Similar to how we address the opioid crisis, and to the caller's question, she's spot on. The mental health issue and the opioid issue, not 100%, of course, but there is a lot of overlap. And what we've tried to do is break down those silos. That's why Hub and Spoke for rebuilding the opioid crisis infrastructure, if you will, is so important. We're going to create these 9 hubs around the state, not just in Manchester, Concord, Nashua, but really all over the state, so folks have a local place in their community to come in, get service stay with their families, stay with their communities. That's the same approach you have to take with mental health. Our mental health agencies do a great job across the state right now.
The community mental health centers.
The community mental health centers. So, and they need the funding and the resources. We've made a big commitment to nurses, to the $24 million that we are proposing to basically double the nursing capacity in the state in all varieties of nurses, whether it's within mental health or acute care or medical care, whatever it might be. Attacking the workforce issue is really one of the biggest barriers here.
Well, it's huge, and we've heard about that. So what is the estimated cost of this 10-year mental health plan, Governor? Because, again, as one of our emailers, Karen, says, we had one before. It was great, but it was never funded.
So on a per-year basis, if you look at what we're looking at now, again, the final plan isn't out until January, but it isn't insurmountable, right? If you're looking at between $10 and $20 million for the next few years to get the system not just stabilized, but actually moving in the right direction and making those investments in workforce, you're going to transform the system. There's no doubt about that. It is one of those problems that doesn't churn overnight. We made it a priority on day one 2 years ago. We've made huge progress. There's no doubt about that. But my sense is in the next 3 to 4 years, you're going to see some very, very significant turnaround. We've gotten, the emergency wait room list, folks waiting to get into the New Hampshire hospital back in 2016 was over 70 people sitting in emergency rooms in the state waiting to get in.
In a mental health crisis.
Last week, it was down to about 19. So we've again, made huge strides there. There's no doubt. But there's still work to go.
Well, and you mentioned earlier when we talked about the budget, Governor, the idea of not spending too much in good times because eventually the economy does slow down and then you have to cut. And you also mentioned your hub and spoke model for the opioid crisis, a lot of that funded by a huge federal grant. A lot of people have been saying, hey, hub and spoke sounds good. Bravo for the money from the feds. But it goes away after 2 years. So then is the state on the hook for that?
Well, so a couple things. The money is really to set up the infrastructure. The reason when I came into office, we spent about $3.5 million a year. Right, that's all that came into the governor's commission. I've been able to triple that money and take it off the taxpayer roll. So it comes through a charitable contribution through the hospitals now, not on the taxpayers. And we have three times as much to spend than ever before. Then you add in the money that's going to create the infrastructure, the hub and spoke system. A lot of that gets the system up and running over the next couple of years and allows us to really address the immediate needs of the issue because we have so many folks that are dealing with addiction, so many folks that don't have access to treatment or recovery. The key is that the number one thing I hear when I talk to folks in this world is they're addicted, they get treatment, they're in recovery, they slip, they're addicted, they're in treatment. It's this never-ending cycle of recidivism. And about 10% go off and they get better, and 10%, unfortunately, don't make it, right? So what you need to do, if you can reduce the recidivism, the whole system becomes more efficient with a community-based system. The tripling of the governor's commission money, the alcohol fund money, as we call it, to from about $3.5 million to over $10 million per year is now enough to really drive a lot of those opportunities. Plus, let's not forget, the federal government isn't going away. Will they come back with the amount of money they had in this original SOAR grant?
Yeah,
no, probably not. But I don't think
years.
We need that either. So the federal government is going to continue to be a player here. We're setting up a model that can be really replicated across the country. It's going to be phenomenal. The country right now is seeing an increase of about 10% in overdoses. We're seeing a decrease here in New Hampshire. We are ahead of the game.
Largely because of the wider availability of Narcan. Isn't that right,
Narcan's is definitely a big part of it. But I think nobody is not talking about this. We are on the front of a real culture change in terms of recovery-friendly workplaces, making sure your employers understand what the issue is so people can stay employed, they can stay healthy, they can stay in their communities with their families. Narcan availability is obviously a big piece of it. But everyone's just a lot more aware here in New Hampshire about what this crisis is and how to deal with it than in other states. And so we're ahead of the game. We were one of the first states to really recognize the crisis, without a doubt. We have one of the hardest hits, but we're already seeing some very positive results. And with hub and spoke coming into place, the efficiency of the system and the cost will undoubtedly get much better for New Hampshire.
Well, and NHPR is taking a big look at this. Our news department will be following up on some of that work here in the Exchange. Thanks to Elizabeth and Karen for those emails. We welcome your emails for Governor Sununu, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Governor, Leela's calling in from Dover. Hi, Leela. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, my name is Lila.
Oh, Lila, go ahead. Yep.
Calling in from Dover. Governor Sununu, I heard back in 2016 you were on the Exchange. I heard you say that if there was community support for offshore wind, you wouldn't stand in the way. So since then, 20 towns and cities have passed warrant articles and resolutions urging you to move forward in requesting a federally funded task force to investigate offshore wind. This could lower energy rates and create jobs for Granite Staters. So I'm wondering, can we count on you to request the task force from the Bureau of Ocean and Energy Management within the first 30 days of 2019?
Oh, sure.
Supporting
yeah.
offshore wind.
Yeah, look,
okay.
if you want to set up a task force to look at wind, I don't have any problem with that at all. No, of course. I mean, ultimately, the task force has to look at, you know, when we talk about how we're going to deal with renewable energy, I talk a lot about making sure you look at the social, economic, and environmental impacts. You know, one of the things that I want to do when we talk about whether it's solar energy or renewable energy, there's a cost to it, right? We know there's an upfront cost, but potentially, you know, some real long-term benefits economically and definitely environmentally. So my program is really focusing on solar, and that, you know, I'm all for getting more solar power out there. But let's remember, solar power is really a regressive tax. Those who cannot benefit the most end up paying the most. So in other words, low-income families, folks in apartment buildings, folks in low-income communities, the elderly, folks on fixed incomes, they benefit the least from solar power. Very rarely, I mean, solar panels on a millionaire's house, you know, looks nice, but they can pay the bill. The bill is really being paid by the low-income families. So my focus is this. I'm all for expanding solar and looking at wind. That would be wonderful. But let's make sure that the costs being borne by those systems are not being paid by the lowest income families. I want those projects to be focused on, not these giant mega arrays that put money in the back pockets of these big wealthy developers. I want that money to be returned directly to folks in low-income families, low-income neighborhoods, the elderly, fixed incomes. That's where those solar projects should go. And that's going to be my focus, making sure those that otherwise would be paying the most and be bearing the brunt of those costs actually get the benefits from those types of programs.
Well, let's talk about alternative energy. And you vetoed a bill that solar supporters said would have helped their industry by allowing more net metering and allowing some of these community projects, not so much big developers, but like cities and towns, to put these in place, schools, town buildings, and so forth.
Yeah, just to be clear, that bill allowed to go from 1 to 5 megawatts. So if you want a town building or a school, those are megawatt or below. Those are not 5 megawatt projects. Up to 5 megawatts, you're looking at a power generator now, a big developer, you know, clear-cutting 30 to 50 to 100 acres or more of land for these giant, massive solar arrays. And it would allow, and which, by the way, I don't mind a large solar array, but they were going to get retail, premium, top-of-the-line pricing. Again, someone has to pay for that. That's the low-income families and folks on fixed incomes that don't receive the direct benefit. Their bills aren't going down. Their bills are going up, right? So I don't mind looking at those solar arrays, but allow them, if you're going to be a power generator, treat them like a power generator. They should get paid a wholesale rate like any other power generator does. You do that, then it makes perfect sense. You get the environmental benefit. The system gets more power into it. We're enhancing and encouraging solar energy. But why should they get more money than anybody else when they're acting like everyone else?
Well, this was a big, big debate, and we'll follow up on it maybe in the new year, because I'm sure there'll be bills regarding regarding
it's
the expansion
simple.
Of solar energy and who benefits and so
be
forth.
Fair. But whatever you do, you got to be fair.
We did get an email from a listener, actually a couple listeners, but one from Elizabeth, who says she's very concerned about global warming, New Hampshire's energy policy. I'd love to ask you about this, Governor. This has been big news this fall. The federal government recently issued a pretty alarming report about the impacts of climate change already underway. How do you view this report, Governor Sununu, and some of the others that seem to come in a steady stream this year?
Well, look, these reports have been coming in for a steady stream for 20 years, right? So when you look at, you know, we can have a debate about climate change and all that kind of stuff. Climate change is happening. It is obviously very likely, you know, man-made driven. There's aspects to that, of course. But we have to look at what we're doing here in New Hampshire, right? How are we going to affect that change? Again, expanding solar power, making sure that the low-income families don't have to pay for it. Looking at a task force to study wind offshore. Absolutely. No problem with that. Whatever we do, you have to look at the social, economic, and environmental impacts and just be smart about what you do and understand what the impacts, both positive and negative, are going to be on your citizens.
Leela, thank you so much for the call. Another follow-up on the climate change question for you, Governor Sununu, after a break. And then we'll take a lot more of your calls, emails, questions. Thank you so much. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. More with Governor Chris Sununu in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
What makes New Hampshire, New Hampshire? Is it the people?
We never used to have a snow day. Never. No. It had to be really bad.
Or is it the landscape?
All right, so we'll climb out. We'll go for a hike. The Pemigewasset Wilderness Area at Lincoln
Perhaps
Woods.
It's a little of both. I'm Sam Evans Brown, and this holiday season, consider supporting the station that connects you to the people and places unique to New Hampshire with a tax-deductible year-end gift to NHPR. Give now at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, a conversation with Governor Chris Sununu. We're hearing from you by email, exchange@nhpr.org, or with a phone call, 1-800-892-6477. And you can also watch our conversation with the governor on Facebook Live, as well as listening today. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. And Governor Sununu, I'd love to go back to our listeners, but just a couple more quick questions about climate, because there's been a lot of reporting, as I said, this fall about the impacts. When we've talked about this in the past, you and I, you've expressed some uncertainty as to whether you thought man-made emissions were responsible. Now the research is almost unanimous on this. And in light of the scientific consensus on man-made emissions, what's the role of state government there?
Be smart. Look at data. Use facts. I mean, that's the most important thing. Whether you're talking about climate change or opioids or mental health, don't legislate with gut reaction. And it's very easy to do that, right? Especially the political climate that we're in, is that people are very polarized now. They're very angry. One of my roles as governor is to stay positive, to kind of bring the level of intensity down a little bit so you can have more realistic, practical conversations, whatever the issue may be. In the era of climate change, there's a lot of passion on the different sides of this. The fact it's political, it always baffles me a little bit, right? This should be one of those issues that is not political, that is simply based on science and data. And then when government comes into play, a lot of times government is about what you're going to fund, right? What you're going to spend in terms of operational costs, infrastructure costs, and what costs will be borne long term by both as a taxpayer and a ratepayer, right? So I vetoed a couple bills last session, primarily because it raised rates, right? Electric rates. When we have some of the highest rates in the country, That's a priority to make sure that we're not driving that problem further, exacerbating that problem further. If we were in one of the southern states where they're paying a third of what we pay, then you have a little more flexibility. You have a little more option potentially to make investments or to understand, we have a little more flexibility with where rates are going to go. My belief is this. If you're going to say that you want to lower rates for the state of New Hampshire, then lower rates for the state of New Hampshire. You can't have it both ways. You can't say we're going to support all this legislation that raises rates and then go tell your constituents that you're fighting for lower rates. Right? So that's not fair. That's not being honest. So let's have an honest discussion about what we want to do and what those impacts will be.
Two more quickies on this. So do you now agree, Governor Sununu, with the consensus that man-made emissions are indeed responsible for the temperature rises that we're seeing?
Man-made emissions have a part to play in climate change. Yes, fact, done. Let's move on, right? What are we going to your original question? What are we going to do about it?
Right. What do you do about it?
Yeah. What are we going to do about it? And that's where my focus is in terms of what is an appropriate, not just role, but position to be in terms of making sure that we're being responsible. We're helping the environment. We're looking at the social impacts. And again, we're just in a tougher place than a lot of other states when it comes to the economic impact because we're already so burdened with these incredibly high electric rates. So, yeah, you have to be very cognizant that we have one of the oldest populations in the country. We have a lot more people on fixed income. Comes here than
we're also
in
one
other
of the wealthiest of the states in the nation.
We are also one of the wealthiest states, and our economy is booming. That's great. But let's remember that when times get tough, you have a lot of folks on fixed incomes. You have a lot of folks that have to pay these bills. They are the ones that least are likely to benefit from solar power. When we build these giant arrays, let's say we were to build a 5-megawatt array, does a little old lady on a fixed income in Newfields, New Hampshire, get any benefit from that? No. In fact, she's the one that pays more. That's a reality. So let's understand how that's going to impact people and be honest about that. So my plan is I want to focus it so the little old lady in Newfields can actually get a benefit from that solar power, actually can see a reduction in her rates.
Well, we do hear that solar power, wind power, the costs are coming down in some places, competitive with fossil fuels. I'm going to set that aside for now, Governor, but it's really interesting to talk with you about this. And
sure.
We will be following up in the new year. But back to our listeners, lots of people who want to join us. And Tom is waiting in Sandown. Hi, Tom. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks to the Exchange for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling on a positive comment regarding Governor Sununu. Our economy is booming, our communities are safer, and our kids are getting the education they deserve. New Hampshire is such a better place under Governor Chris Sununu. Presently, I am a county commissioner in Rockingham County. I've had the privilege to work alongside Governor Sununu and have seen this passion firsthand. I've watched them fight to slash back taxes, roll back unnecessary regulations, and fight against costly tax and toll increases. I've asked the governor a number of times to be invited into his office and has done nothing but open the door and listen to my county issues. I'm calling regarding positive things for the governor. I don't consider him your typical politician. He listens, he cares, and unlike other politicians, has maintained a positive attitude.
Well, Tom, thank you for the call.
Thanks. I think that's Tom Borello down in Rockingham. So Tom's a great guy. You know, we work a lot with county commissioners, you know, because they are a great voice for a lot of those counties, and so we bring them in. I think Tom is really the head of the county commissioners. You know, I appreciate all the positivity, and again, it isn't just me, right? It's working with the legislature, working with both sides of the aisle. Team. I've been very blessed with putting together a very good team. So I appreciate the nice comments, Tom.
Well, I want to ask you about more local levels, so I'm glad you called, Tom, issues that percolate down from the local level, and specifically downshifting, Governor Sununu. I'm sure you're familiar with this, and I'm sure people have talked to you about it, including county commissioners, where towns or counties have to pick up where state funding used to be there. Both Republican and Democratic governors have done this. We got a note from a listener, Michael.
Not me.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that. Let me read you Michael's note, and then I'll let you say that. Michael says, the state of New Hampshire has consistently failed to meet its obligation to municipalities and school districts by reducing revenues to localities and not meeting legal obligations, such as sharing of rooms and meals tax and revenue and state contributions toward the New Hampshire retirement system. Now, Michael does say, while some positive steps have been taken, such as additional one-time aid for infrastructure, more long-term assistance is needed. So Michael asked us, please ask Governor Sununu what he plans to propose in his upcoming budget to address rising property taxes, speaking of the little old lady in Newfields and her property taxes, by restoring revenues to municipalities. So, Tom, thank you for that call, and Michael for the email. And go ahead, Governor Sununu.
So let's be fair. I've never downshifted a single extra dollar to a city and town. In fact, just the opposite. What he's referring to is the massive downshifting that happened around, it's like 2010, 2011, and it put a huge burden on a lot of those municipalities. There's no doubt about it. Last year, we simply downshifted cash, right? So while other governors downshifted that burden, we and liability, we downshifted money in terms of, A, we got full-day kindergarten done. Let's remember, the communities that were previously paying for full-day kindergarten just themselves are now receiving a check from the state, over $1 million just to Manchester alone, $35 million in roads and bridges last year. Every single city and town got a check. I handed a check of $500,000 to the town of Salem. That's real money to address their infrastructure needs that otherwise would be borne by a local property
taxpayer.
Those are
one-time monies.
Those are one-time monies.
That's not long-term sustainable funding that used to be there for many, many years.
Right. So then, but then let's remember the school infrastructure aid that we pushed down. $30 million in safer school infrastructure. Before my administration came along, the state had never put a penny into safe school infrastructure. We invested $30 million, again, in projects that otherwise would have been borne by those cities and towns. By making those infrastructure investments today, you help provide more financial flexibility on operational costs if a downturn were to happen. So are we going to have more one-time funds this year? Absolutely we are. And those are the investments we need to make at a very localized level. So he's absolutely right. Previous administrations did downshift a lot of liability.
Partly because of the recession under Governor Lynch and
partly because
Bill
of
O'Brien.
Bad management. No, let's be fair. Partly because of bad management, because when times were good, the government bloated themselves. They didn't think long term. They didn't think strategically. And when they needed more money, they sucked it out of all the cities and towns. That's why, to your original question, on a good budget, you have to be responsible about it. You cannot make promises that you can't keep for the long term. So bad budgeting in the mid-2000s, irresponsible spending in the mid-2000s created a liability that the state, when times got tough, they made some cuts, and then they sucked all the cash out of the local communities. We've done just the opposite.
So what can cities and towns expect from your next budget, Governor Sununu? Will it be more one-time gifts, or will there be a new plan for sustainable?
Well, I think the one-time money is incredibly well-received.
I'm sure they're happy with it.
No,
but
it's
hard to make a plan when you don't know what the state's going to do from year to year.
Yeah, so no, I mean, we will likely have some more one-time monies, to be sure, some surplus funds. We've kind of managed our expectations, which were a bit robust. The economy is absolutely booming. People wonder why I focus so much on business and the economy. When you have more young people moving into New Hampshire than any other state in the Northeast, more businesses moving into New Hampshire at a rate that we haven't seen in years, we have the lowest unemployment rate right, in 30 years. The Sununu administration has the lowest unemployment rate since the Sununu administration, right, in 1988.
Your father's administration.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fact. The reason is it creates opportunity at the local level as more people move in, as businesses are growing, to create that revenue and that tax revenue for themselves, as well as the state has more opportunity at our level, both in the short and long term, because we're creating a smart budget in addressing the infrastructure needs of the state, while also being able to maintain investments in the priorities. I mean, we invested in our infrastructure and opioids. Let's go back to that. We're investing big money in the infrastructure today that reduces the long-term costs. That's smart investing, and that's exactly what you need to keep rolling out across the state.
Well, again, I appreciate the calls and emails. Tom, thank you. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. And another call. This is Richard in Goffstown. Hi, Richard. You're on the air with Governor Sununu. Go ahead.
Hello, and good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
Good morning.
From you. Actually, from Route 3.
From Route 3. Route 3 is a big, pretty big road. Where are you on Route 3?
I'm down in Billerica right now. I am one of your citizens who makes this massive commute every morning back and forth to work.
So my guess is you're not driving very fast right now.
You got it.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. Hey, I got 20,000 good high-paying available jobs in New Hampshire if you want to turn right around and come back.
I wish I could agree with you on that, sir. Every time I've been approached by somebody in New Hampshire, it looks like I'm taking a 50% pay cut.
So that's why you commute to Mass, Richard.
That's why I commute to Mass along with a whole lot of other people.
Yeah, about 100,000 people, I think.
Yeah, and the governor, there's a joke down here that in the morning the state of Massachusetts drops 1 foot below New Hampshire.
So what's your question for the governor, Richard?
Well, the question is on commuter rail, because, I mean, I think, you know, I've been in cities where commuter rail has existed, like Washington, over in Europe. I mean, it's really popular over there. I spent 4 years in England, and we had commuter rail all over London. But we don't have anything like that up in New Hampshire, and it seems like we have a big roadblock because everybody thinks that, money should be spent on roads, which I-93 has been going on for a number of years now, and I used to drive that one.
Okay. So, Richard, in the interest of time, I'm just going to let you go, but I hear your question. Commuter rail, this has been a big issue. This was a big issue between you and Colin Van Ostern in the last time you ran.
Two times ago.
We've
had a couple. We've had a couple elections since then. I proposed I allowed the commuter rail study to go into the last 10-year highway plan. The legislature took it out. That's fine. Let's also be honest about commuter rail. Commuter rail is a $300 million project and would take at most. About 0.5% of the cars off the road. So you're still going to have traffic jams. I take a little bit of exception. When you look at the per capita household income. So on average, what our households make in New Hampshire is about $73,000 a year per household on average. In Massachusetts, it's about $74,500.
Right? So you're quibbling with Richard's
argument
that
he could
make a lot more money in Mass.
Oh, we got 50% pay, in New Hampshire. That's 100% false.
Still, Governor, we do have 100,000 people every day who commute
down
to Mass.
Oh, we do.
They're seeking something down there.
Yep. So a commuter rail would take about $2,500 a day. 2,500 of the 100,000. So I'm not against it. I'm not. But let's be practical and understand if we're going to spend $300 million plus another 10 to 12 million per year to subsidize it, let's be honest about what the benefits are going to be. Are you going to get 0.5% of a percent of those folks off the road? Absolutely. Is it going to be a great benefit to them going to Boston? I have no doubt it will be. But there's a very big cost to that. Don't think that all of a sudden all the traffic is going to disappear or anything like that.
What about the Manchester Airport, Governor Sununu? The airport has struggled at other airports in the region are doing fine. Logan and TF Green are doing fine. But somehow Manchester Airport does not seem to have recovered from the recession. Yeah. And the folks in Manchester say, hey, give us commuter rail so we can bring folks to the airport.
Two things. So let's back up a little bit. We have a new airport director. I sat down with him last week. Great. He's aggressive. I think he's a great guy. He's got some very exciting plans in how to bring a lot of those routes back into Manchester because we were losing routes. In fact, we just announced, I think, we got a couple more routes back in just this week. So already we're seeing things turn around a little bit. But to your point, there's been a massive dip in ridership out of Manchester, right? So why would we bring a train? Are people going to get on a train in Lowell, Mass, to take to go to Manchester Airport for a 6 or 7 a.m. flight? Remember, Manchester Airport's you always go through a hub for the most part. So those flights at 6, 7, 8 a.m., you're going to have to get on the get on the train at like 4 in the morning to get there to make your flight. Why wouldn't, there's no traffic at that time of the day going north. So the idea that the train is going to enhance ridership into Manchester Airport, no, not at all. And if anything, it's going to cost them money because you're going to have less people parking. And the Manchester Airport relies on that parking revenue quite a bit. So that's really not the issue. That's a quick again, I go back to it sounds good. But when you look at the facts of how that system would work, it's not necessarily a benefit to man. The commuter rail is all about driving people down into work into Boston. That's it.
And I don't want to do that.
Well, it's not that I don't want to do that. It's that there's a huge cost to that. There's a massive cost to that. Over in Exeter, I live right just literally a half a mile away from the Downeaster, right? Those trains don't even arrive into Exeter from the south until about 10:30 in the morning. Nobody's coming out of Boston and going to work on the seacoast of New Hampshire. It's all about ridership directly down to the south. So let's just understand what those infrastructure investments would really be about. It's driving people to work to Boston. Not that there's necessarily that's a bad thing, but it comes with a massive cost.
Well, and Richard, we could talk about this forever. Your millennial council, Governor Sununu said it was interested in commuter rail.
Sure.
So
yeah, and public transportation as a whole. It's not just commuter rail, right? So it's public transportation. It's public transportation within the city areas of Manchester or Nashua, public transportation, the bus system, whatever it might be. Commuter rail is obviously a piece of that, sure.
Well, Richard, thank you again. And already whetting my appetite for topics to tackle more fully in the new year. Thank you for the call. I did want to ask you about guns, Governor Sununu. We heard from a listener recently, Maureen, who sadly noted the 6-year anniversary of the Newtown massacre. Still heartbreaking to think about. And Maureen has a couple questions. She said, I'd like to know what you're doing to protect children in our schools from shooters who would do them harm. What kind of common sense gun legislation will you propose to regulate guns sold and used for the purpose of killing humans, not hunters of animals, but killers of people? Maureen says, when will you introduce regulations that give more security in terms of who can own guns? So to that point, in terms of more security, in terms of who can own guns, who should, Governor, in your opinion, be allowed access to guns in this state and who should not?
Well, the gun laws in the state are pretty darn good. We are one of the safest states in the country when it comes to firearm safety, and we take that responsibility very seriously. The issue of schools is about mental health. This is about making sure a kid with a problem doesn't become a kid with a crisis. Remember that when you're talking about the tragedy of a school shooting, we've missed the boat in terms of the government and our society's responsibility in making sure that that individual didn't get to that point, right? Let's get to the core of the issue. That's about the kids. That's about these individuals that would do these folks harm. I sat last week. Scarlett Lewis has become a great friend and a great asset, frankly, to the state of New Hampshire. Scarlett lost her son in the Newtown shooting. And she's the one really driving the Choose Love program, which is the social emotional learning program that we've embraced here in the state. We're the first state to do so.
Within the schools.
Within the schools to actually start changing the culture of how we treat each other, how we interact with each other, making sure that we're teachers and parents and students all peer-to-peer even have the training to identify where there is a need, where there is a gap. If you have a student coming in and committing a shooting, we have completely forgotten that student. We let him slip, that the individual slip through the cracks. That is the real tragedy here. So getting much more adept at recognizing and being able to deal with undiagnosed mental health issues with these kids, getting them resources they need, more community programs. That is the core of this crisis, right? Saying that you're going to just ban more guns, again, it might sound good, but at the end of the day, have we really helped those individuals?
Well, many, not all, but many of these shooters at schools and elsewhere, shopping malls, movie theaters,
sure,
concerts, churches, temples, you know, they come in from the outside. So they're not kids within the schools. These shooters come into the schools from outside.
Sure, and I invested $30 million in safe school infrastructure, something no other governor had ever done before.
So I want to ask you one more gun question after a short break, and then we will turn to a bunch of other topics. You can keep your questions coming in as well. Thank you for that one, Maureen. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, it's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup, a special edition as the team considers the top state headlines of the year. That's Friday in The Exchange. This hour, we're sitting down with Governor Chris Sununu, and we're hearing from you. You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And you can also watch our discussion on Facebook Live in addition to listening today. One more question about guns, Governor Sununu, and then we'll move back to our listeners. And I have a couple more questions for you. You mentioned mental health and the mental health of these shooters, whether coming in from outside the school or inside. New Hampshire's been one of a handful of states that hasn't reported mental health information to the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, the one that often referred to as NICS.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that, Governor? Should that information be shared with the National Background Check System? People often say, hey, before we pass new laws, we need to strengthen our
current
background check
system. That system is full of holes. I got to be honest. If the system really worked and wasn't as problematic as it is, even Democrats and Republicans alike go, whoa, whoa, whoa. I mean, what are we releasing?
So what holes should we plug?
Look, I think the holes are really Congress has to really rebuild that entire system. I mean, let me just be very frank about it. It sounds easy to report to that system. When you sign up for that, anybody can report. A doctor could report. The judges could report. I mean, it creates all of these loopholes for people to have access to that system to make those reportings. And they're just judgment calls, really, at the end of the day. So, a lot of folks have a lot of hesitation with that. Again, here in the state, it's really about making sure that we are addressing these issues adequately, that we're treating these people that have problems. We're not letting whether it's kids or other folks. And as you mentioned, it's not just about school shootings. I mean, we need to be prepared for any type of shooting. We've been very fortunate so far, but we know that at any moment, anything can happen. That's unfortunately where we are. So we need a system that is creating a stronger culture, a stronger awareness of undiagnosed mental health issues and allowing people to get those services. Reporting to a national system again, so we're going to put you in a national database. Great, sounds good. What have we really done for the individual? Are we getting that person those services? Are we identifying those things? Are we
strengthening the mental health system as a whole?
Right, you got to have a whole breadth of approach to this thing.
That being said, and we definitely talked about the need, and which everybody agrees on, to strengthen the mental health system. Do you think these names should be reported, Governor Sununu, to the national criminal background check?
Yeah, what names? System? Who's designing the system? I mean, somebody once told me that I think Ted Kennedy was once listed on a no-fly list, right? So somebody said, use the no-fly list and use these nationalized systems. Washington doesn't design their systems with New Hampshire in mind, right? They don't design their systems, frankly, with individuals in mind. They design their systems for the sake of systems. Too often they do that. So we need to be cognizant of that. And in this case, there's just a lot of loopholes. And folks on both sides of the aisle, I think, agree that that could be very problematic if we were to go down that path.
Let's take another call, Governor. This is Ray in Bedford. Hi, Ray. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. Hi, Governor. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Governor, I've been looking at some statistics from state to state, making comparisons, and I find that New Hampshire has the lowest poverty rate in the country, second lowest unemployment, sixth highest per capita income. So all of those are obviously beneficial to, you know, the citizens of New Hampshire. But I was wondering, is that really something that's just a byproduct of the robust national economy? Are there any particular programs or projects you've done that have influenced those benefits?
Ray, thanks a lot for the call.
It's a good question. Look, nationally, we're booming, right? I mean, the rest of the world is a bit stagnant financially.
But the U.S. in general.
Yeah, I mean, U.S. in general is doing very well. New Hampshire seems to we're sticking out, right? We've really focused a lot on first workforce. And I think, again, the reports as of last week came out that said more young people are moving into New Hampshire than in most other states in the Northeast. And that's a huge opportunity for us. More businesses are coming in here. We've visited our 100 businesses in 100 days. And, you know, that really set a marker, I think, a couple of years ago, where everyone started really looking in our direction, saying, "Okay, what's happening?" When BAE was going to massively expand their business, they could have gone anywhere in the country, and they looked at sites all over the country. They ended up staying right here in New Hampshire. When Lonza could have expanded their business anywhere in the world, they're investing $250 million right here in New Hampshire. When Hitchener was going to expand down south because the energy prices were just so high, we were able to go in and work out deals and actually convince them not just to stay but to actually grow right here in New Hampshire. So the word is definitely out in a very positive way. Taylor Caswell leads the Department of Business and Economic Affairs. He and Will Arvello, his whole team there, Mike Bergeron, they're just doing a tremendous job. Really building relationships isn't about just policy. It's about being able to pick up the phone or call folks or call them back when they have an interest in coming to the state going into their office, looking at plans, getting into the nitty-gritty details. That's what businesses like to see.
And we're a small state, so you can talk to somebody face-to-face.
We can talk to them face-to-face. I mean, look, I think large states can talk to people face-to-face. I think governors and public officials get away with not doing it. But you've got, by taking the extra time, by doing the extra work, you can see real results. That's exactly what we're seeing in New Hampshire.
Well, and you broke up the former Department of Revenue and Economic Development.
Dread, as we called it.
And took out the sort of parks and rec and lands in one agency and put just business development in another one.
Yes.
Taylor Caswell, the new head of that. And we'll be talking with him pretty early in the new year.
Taylor's great. No, we made economic development its own agency that reports directly to the governor. It's not buried in bureaucracy. And then we, to your point, we added the natural resources with cultural resources, right? Because that was a good synergistic fit. And we brought in Sarah Stewart to come in and be the commissioner of that department. So just by managing sometimes, by allowing certain things to be emphasized where they need to be emphasized and staying on top of things, getting into details, picking up the phone, building personal relationships, it can have a world of difference. And not just in that moment, but it sets the tone for the long term.
Well, Ray, thanks a lot for the call. Another email, Governor, came in, a couple emails actually, from listeners who were concerned about the reporting in the Union Leader about the spending by your inaugural committee. Here's one from Nate, who says, I, like many others, was disturbed by the UL reporting concerning Governor Sununu's inaugural committee. Nate has a couple questions. He says, what did the governor know about the committee's operations and financial dealings? Does the governor believe operational decision-making by the committee, including the process of selecting vendors and payouts to family members, was carried out with the integrity that voters expect
from the
New Hampshire governor?
Absolutely.
So I wonder about that, Governor Sununu. We heard from a lot of people who said, ooh, you know, $50,000 to your sister's company, it just doesn't smell good.
We have two things. There's a new law in the books that requires, for the first time ever, we have to be disclosed more than any other governor in history. We have to file our reports quarterly or you know, every 6 months, which we do. No other governor has ever had to do that. So we've been more transparent in our spending, who brings in the money and how it's spent, than any governor in history.
Lawmakers changed that recently.
Recently, yeah. They changed that right before I came into office, I believe. Or maybe it was in the first session. But we follow the letter to the law to a T. There's absolutely no question about that. So when you look at how the money is spent, again, we don't have a credit card for the fund, right? So someone will, for example, in my case, I'll spend money. It could be on travel, you know, buying an airplane ticket or gifts for dignitaries. Like sometimes the dignitary will come in. The Easter egg hunt, right? The holiday tea for legislators and state employees to come in. Coffee in the mornings. It could be a variety of different things. You know, we spend the money. We get reimbursed. No one, you know, I don't make any income off of this organization at all. And governors have used the money in this way for decades.
The inaugural money.
It's just never been disclosed, right? I get a little miffed because no one's asking these questions of the previous governor or the previous governor or the previous governor. We just disclose more and we're more transparent than anybody. So it allows for the questions to be asked. But we follow the letter of the law to a T, without a doubt. If the legislature wants to change the law and require more disclosure, that's fine. We'll follow the letter of the law however they want to do it. So, you know, by the way, these reports have been out there for 2 years. This is not, again, we file every 6 months. So the fact all these questions are just coming up now, it's just timely given that I just got reelected. People want to make political hay out of something. So it is what it is. So the organization runs as any other private nonprofit does, discloses everything we're supposed to disclose, and stands by every expenditure it's ever made.
Well, and Nate wants to know how involved you were in the decisions to pick providers linked to family and friends.
Well, a bit. So, you know, when we first got elected, you have about 2 months to raise money and put on the inaugural, right? The inaugural is three different events. My sister really took on that role, did an incredible job. A couple different people in our organization took on that role immediately, did an incredible job raising the money, putting on the events, doing it, you know, exactly as we wanted to do it. And they got paid exactly, in fact, probably even a little below market value, but we'll just say, you know, market value for exactly the services that they provided. They did a great job, right? We hired someone to do that. It's not a couple volunteer hours a week. It's an immense undertaking. It's 80 hours a week, and we paid folks to do that. Other governors, I'm sure, have done the same. They just never had to disclose hiring people or how they did it. So we've been more transparent than anyone ever before. People want to make a political story out of this stuff. You know, let it happen. It doesn't really bother us. If the legislature wants more disclosure, by all means, we'll do whatever they want to do.
Well, I want to ask you about sort of party politics here in Concord. We talked earlier about how you may be working with Democrats, how you've been reaching out to the new Democratic state leaders. But in Washington, as you know, Governor Sununu, the Trump White House has had a lot of scandals, and you were reelected in a year that was okay for Republicans, but not super favorable here in New Hampshire. As a Republican elected official, how much do you think all the problems we've seen at the White House is affecting your party's brand? Do you think it brought you guys down in the
election? I think the national discord on both sides has created a lot of polarization and a lot of anger, right? There's no doubt about that. So I think what I take from it is when people are casting a vote, are they casting it to make a statement? Are they casting it because they really believe in the candidates that they're voting for? Are they casting it out of anger? Are they casting it because the party says to vote a certain way and go straight ticket, whatever it might be? So that's what I try to get at. And that's why we spend so much time with actual individuals, right? With constituents. What's driving them? What are the issues that they're very passionate about? So at the end of the day, there's not an easy answer to it all, other than to say that I think people and all of us have to take responsibility, whether you're an elected official or not, to do two things. First, as an elected official, understand the job is bigger than yourself. The job is not about me, right? Senator Susie, her job is just not about being in her role and getting reelected. She has a much bigger responsibility to 1.35 million people in this state, and we have to really appreciate that. As individuals, we have to understand that how we talk to each other, how we, the information that we both take in and give out has an impact on our culture and our society and the polarization that we're seeing. So it's a lot of negativity on both sides. And I think we all just have to take a pause, take a step back, understand who we are, what keeps us grounded, and what our real responsibilities are. And if we do that, I think we can come back. We're in a tough time. There's no doubt right now. But I'm an engineer, and I believe in cycles. So we're in a tough cycle, but I have no doubt we'll come back. And, 2 weeks ago when I had the honor of going down to the President H.W.'s, Bush's funeral. And that week, if you remember, I think the nation as a whole took a sigh of relief and said, yes, this is what public service is about. This is what a real servant's. And George H.W. Bush was an immense, but not public servant and an incredible family man and was really grounded. And we remembered, as both sides came together, what good public service was all about. And that's that. I think when I saw that nationally and that breath of fresh air nationally for that week, that gave me a lot of confidence that over time we will get back to a more sensible place of working with each other across the aisle. No more of this, the president versus the legislature, the president versus Democrats, all that kind of stuff. That's easy fodder. I mean, it really is. It's media selling themselves and all that kind of stuff. But we all have to take responsibility in those discussions as well.
We sat down earlier this week with four freshman lawmakers just elected to the State House, two Republicans, two Democrats. They were all just newly excited. As one of them said, the hammer of partisanship hasn't come down on us yet. And all of them said they really want to make a difference in the way that people with different views talk to each other, mm-hmm. talk about each other. I've just heard you weigh in on this. What do you say, though, Governor Sununu, about, national politicians, including the president, who are just kind of whipping up the base by, whipping down the other guy?
I, as the governor of the state, I have to lead by example. And I think that's why I've been very successful, if I may, because we try to bring people in. You treat them as individuals. You treat them as people. It's not about policy and party every single time. It's about people and their stories and the troubles they're having, the barriers they're facing, and how to use those stories to create better policy, to break down the barriers. Let the legislation, let the policies be driven by the individuals. That's how we do it different here in New Hampshire. And I think that's why we've gotten such great results. And we're booming both economically and making huge progress on opioids and mental health, all of these things. It's not because 424 legislators and a governor had some good ideas in the hallway. Not at all. It's because we're spending the time outside of the State House, letting those voices be heard inside and driving better policy and better results for our people.
Well, we got an email from Daniel in Exeter, sort of to this point. He says, I've heard a lot about what the GOP needs you to do for us over the next 2 years. Daniel says, veto everything tax related and anything that will choke the Second Amendment. Daniel says, I think all Republicans, young and old, can agree on these. What I would like to hear are your viewpoints on what the GOP needs to do to help you, he says. It is obvious that while the GOP begs you to do your job, you were the one who won re-election. The party is in turmoil, Daniel says, and needs to be rebuilt into the organization it was decades ago. He asks, in your opinion, how does that start, and what does the party need to do to win elections and turn New Hampshire back into the last bastion for liberty
in
New England? Daniel, thank you.
Yeah, the party is not in turmoil by any means. I think what he's really referring to, the Democrats, let's just talk party politics for a second. That's what this is about. The Democrats are a machine, right? Ray Buckley, I don't agree with him on much of anything in terms of policy, but I give him a lot of credit and respect. He raises a ton of money. He brings in millions of outside dollars.
And he's a paid staff person. I understand the volunteer.
He's paid very, very well.
The Republican state party chair in New Hampshire is a volunteer position,
It's technically paid, but I don't think anyone's ever taken pay for it yet. So we're essentially, we run very old school, right? It is run essentially as a volunteer organization. I think what the questioner is asking is, you know, should we run more like the Democrats, if you will, more in a professional organization? Probably in some instances, yes. I think there just has to be better coordination, and I think we need to probably evolve our party system pretty substantially to make sure we're being efficient with how we spend money and all that. I mean, the Democrats are machines. They bring in so many millions of dollars from outside the state to drive local success and results. I guess I can give them credit for it, but it makes it really difficult. I hate the fact that all this money comes from outside of the state. I hate that we drive that. Candidates up and down the aisle do that on both sides, frankly. So I'm a big believer. I don't mind raising money for a campaign. I think there's nothing wrong with that. It shows people want to support the policies and individuals that are going to generally, you know, come into line with where they want to see the state to go. So does the Republican Party as a whole need to change this strategy? Yeah, probably a little bit. There'll be some new leadership there, and hopefully that leadership will embrace those changes and be a little, for lack of a better term, a little more organized.
You know? Well, it's interesting, Daniel, and thank you for the email. And love to end on a lighter note with you, Governor Sununu, since it's almost Christmas and people are starting to, you know, finish up and wrap up for the end of the year. You come from a big family.
I do.
Brothers and sisters?
Seven.
Seven.
I'm number seven of eight.
You got your own family. Have you finished your Christmas shopping?
Done. Last night. Nailed it. I was so excited. I was at Manchester. I was at the Mall of New Hampshire in Manchester.
That's brave.
No joke. In about 45 minutes, I got in and out of six stores. It was like one of the most efficient Christmas spending jobs I've ever done.
Wait, but is that fair? Did you have like security detail getting rid of other shoppers?
No. Oh, come on. Not at all.
No?
But in a mall, I try to walk like 10 feet ahead of all of them. So I try to walk faster than everybody when I'm in the mall.
So
being efficient as a dad.
You shopped at the New Hampshire Mall. You didn't shop online?
No, I don't like shopping online.
Yeah.
No, I like to see it, and I like going to malls and downtown stores and things like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're
done.
What
about you? I mean, you guys do Christmas and Hanukkah, right?
Yep. I think we're done, but I haven't had time to double check.
Are you taking time off for New Year's?
I am.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You going away a little bit?
No.
Oh.
Just staying here.
Staycations.
Here. My boy's coming back from college, so I want to stick around.
All right. Staycations are the best.
All right. Governor Sununu, it's been really fun to talk to you. After your budget, come back. We'll pick it
That'd
apart.
Be great. Anytime.
We'll take a look at it.
Pick it apart. We'll be
celebrating
it with a big bow.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks a lot.
That's New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu, and you're listening to The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.